Hello, listeners. My name is Mark. If you have been enjoying the Listener Lore episodes, please come over to my separate podcast feed, Lorehammer Listener Lore. On this daily podcast channel, I will be reading one story a day and sharing your creative works with others and giving my feedback at the end. So, if you like grimdark 40k short stories, come join me at Lorehammer Listener Lore, the 40k podcast where you get to write the script.
Hello and welcome back to Lorehammer. My name is Eric.
Hey, I'm Mark.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. And now we will name all the listeners.
And you are the listener.
Yeah. All the roles have been established.
That's right.
That's perfect. Wow, what an intro.
And scene.
Okay, listener lore. I like it. We today are going to be reading some lore from our listeners. I think we got five stories this time.
Excellent.
Yeah, I haven't done any pre-reading.
It's always better when you don't, you know?
Yeah.
So give it to us fresh and wriggling.
That's how we like our lore. I like it. Yeah, so if you want to be featured on an episode in this way, email us lorehammerpodcast@gmail.com and you can submit your lore. And when we get around to reading it in 4 years,
that's right.
Yeah, you will be happy. You will get a little hit of dopamine and it will be sweet.
Okay, well, I guess let's just dive right in.
That's how we do it in these. Okay, so this is from Timberlake.
Oh, we also don't editorialize.
No.
So if we struggle to read things, it's because we're struggling.
Yeah, I can already see this one has two periods in one of the sentences. I'm not even sure how to.
Yeah, how do you communicate?
Pause it.
He's the master of the dramatic pause.
Excellent. Okay, so here we go. Slanesh has given birth to a demon prince from a part of the Dark Prince's own tongue to form the Hunter of the Laughing God. His face is a true mirror of excess, but most see is a troop of a harlequin mask. Five masks are that dance on the demon's face. He is the leader of the harem of Slanesh. His every mission gains the Dark Prince closer to freedom, gaining the souls stolen by the harlequins and the laughing god. The horde of elder souls embodying the demonettes, yep, growing the number of soul for the Slanesh army. The Dark Prince has gifted the many-faced demon every excess of power and forces to reign chaos in the name of Slanesh. Okay.
Okay. So he's got like his own chaos demon Slaneshi war. Are they called war bands?
Yeah. Sure. Why not?
Groups, factions.
But it's incursions. I don't fucking know. I don't know what you. I don't know how the demonettes identify. I don't even want to get into that. Okay. They're a
they
horde.
And them.
They. You know. Yeah.
Slanesh, given birth to a demon prince. The Hunter of the Laughing God, I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Because
the Laughing God, he seems pointed very against Slanesh.
Yeah.
So why would Slanesh ignore it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Kind of a cool, you could definitely do a cool little model there with like the masks or whatever. But
oh, absolutely. His face is a true mirror of excess.
Ooh.
His every mission gains the Dark Prince closer to freedom. So he's effectively just trying to like steal back everything that the Harlequin is doing, he just pits himself against.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's very anti-Eldar, anti-Harlequins.
Yeah.
It's kind of
short,
cool.
Simple. There's your lore. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Timberlake. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. You don't need much. You got a purpose. Your demons.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
You know, is there going to be much more than...
Yeah. You have like a solid leader.
Yeah.
With like clear motivations. You have like a very definable goal,
yeah.
But what's nice is you'll never succeed in that goal.
Yeah. That is nice.
Right. So you can constantly just like bring yourself to keep playing and playing with this army.
Yeah. And you have a little bit of conversion opportunity with just like mass and stuff. So
yeah, cool. You can, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, like put some mass on demonettes. You put them on your
almost like they're trying to like hide their true identity. Mm. You could even model them as Harlequins and then put, you could have some Harlequins that you've put demon stuff on.
Yeah, yeah. Like give the crab claw or whatever to some Harlequins.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. So like if people are paying attention, they'll notice that they aren't Harlequins. You know, they're demons.
Yeah. Cool. I like that. That could be very cool. And bye.
Just like that, we're done a whole listener lore. This is going to be a quick episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next one comes from Scott. Explorator Fleet Theta consists of a small number of Mechanicus ships all working in the shadow of a custom-designed Arc Mechanicus ship, augmented with unique weapons of Call's own design. The fleet was launched by Call in secret to capture Blackstone fortresses and other targets, be it technology or location, of high priority as deemed by the Archmagos himself. Theta often employs the use of Quaestor Mechanicus Knighthouse Nexilus to ensure victory on the ground. This is notable as House Nexilus was deemed eradicated by House Malinax during the Horus Heresy. The Mechanicus forces tend to deploy with infantry units, supported by servitors with tactics drawn from multiple Forge Worlds, but do not use any established Forge World colors. Unlike most of 40K, Theta prefers to utilize bargaining or negotiation tactics prior to invasive tactics, most likely to minimize damage to their target. No one outside of the fleet and Call himself knows who commands the fleet, and all ships within the fleet have recorded as destroyed, MIA, or simply do not exist in records. All personnel within the fleet are augmented with kill switches and therefore cannot be captured or interrogated.
Cool.
So it's like a black team, black ops.
Yeah, kind of.
For the Mechanicus.
Yeah. I like this line. Theta prefers to utilize bargaining or negotiation tactics prior to the invasion tactic. You're gonna get invaded.
Yeah, yeah.
But they might like take away all your metal first before they do that.
So you know what like their negotiation is? The negotiation is like, look, we're here.
Yeah.
You're gonna give us everything we want and you're just gonna kill yourself. To make sure you're not in our way.
That's a bad deal for me. I don't think I'm gonna take it.
Well, fuck it. I guess we're invaded.
Damn it, Mechanicum. Yeah. Okay. No, that's cool. I like it.
I think the lack of what did he actually say here? What did Scott say? Okay, they do not use any established Forge World colors. I wonder, are they, you know, like a drab gray? Because you can't just do red, you know, because that's Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if they are like.
Like, you still have to paint these miniatures a color, so what color did
you pick?
Yes,
you can't just leave them gray plastic.
No, now, no one would do that.
No, only a complete fool would play with gray plastic models. So it says you don't use established colors. I wonder what do you use?
Hmm.
You know, I like the idea that all your ships are non-existent or MIA or killed in action.
Yeah.
It just amps up the whole Black Ops team
thing. And like unique weapons that they have of their own design, like just kind of
very singular use, you know, things you won't find replicated out in the rest of the Imperium.
Yeah.
Now if I did if I had to find something,
you do have to.
Okay.
It's the law.
I'm not sure I really like Call's involvement in it. He's a little too involved in everything, I think, right now. And it's such a big character that you don't need.
Yeah.
You know, you can have just as much authority, this Explorator Fleet Theta, and just as much power without including Call's name at all. Yeah. Call, he's just a little bit of like a Gary Stu character.
Yeah. It's best to not write with characters. Typically. Yeah. Now, this was pretty minimal.
Yeah, you weren't like heavy-handed with it by any means. But I think you could just say, by secret order of a High Lord, or secret order of an Archmagos who has been dead for 2,000 years.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like, especially because you say that nobody knows who runs it. No one outside of the fleet and Call himself knows who commands it. So they're already so secret.
Yeah.
You might as well just completely say, like, here's your mission, here's what you're gonna do, you don't need any help doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Is Call, if Call is still giving them orders, you know, I think that's even a little too much involvement. But,
yeah,
it's also not a big deal. I don't super mind
not the
it.
End of the, you were forced
that's
to
right
pick something.
I was forced
that,
yeah, gun to my head,
gun to your head. Yeah, okay. No, it's cool, simple, easy. It's cool. Blackstone fortresses, man, like, that'd be cool to, like, yeah, you're constantly raiding them and, like, trying to,
yeah,
just get them.
I mean, cool. How many even are there?
There's like 7, but a bunch have been destroyed. I think there's only like 1 or 2 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, if that's your main goal, like, that's a cool goal, you know? Like, you're specifically designed to, you know, hunt them down and, like, strip them of whatever secrets they have, and I guess you stop anyone in your way, and that's why you need your special tech. And I also like the House Nexilis inclusion. But I will say it does feel a little weird to have them still named. I think that if I was to do it, I would say there is an unnamed Nighthouse, but they couldn't, you know, maybe they can't completely scrub away their history. Maybe they can't, there's still like a holdout. There's like one signet in some quester knight that, like, right above where the princeps is, there's like one symbol left that they just, they couldn't bring themselves to get rid of. So sure, it, like, makes people think they're of this House Nexilis or whatever. It just, everything else is so
they don't
shrouded.
They don't use colors to denote their army.
Exactly.
Like,
So why would, like, it just feels like anytime someone would see House Nexilis, it should be instantly recognizable.
Yeah.
So that might be something you want to look at. I don't know. Maybe you want people to recognize House Nexilis.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah.
What did they do? Who are they? Yeah.
Well, it's House Nexilis, Mark.
Yes, of course, of course. I got nothing else. Cool story. Very simple.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like these small ones. They just give you so much freedom to play your games.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm here searching for a black fortress. Well, why are you on this planet? Because I think there might be information here, you know?
Well, a big thing, too, I've noticed a lot with, like, 40K writers is just getting lost in the nitty-gritty of nothingness, you know? Mm. Like, why did this happen? Well, 2,000 years ago, this minor incident happened here, which caused this whole butterfly effect. You know, it's like, not everything needs to be just, like, and,
Yeah, I like things that do that, but I don't want to see it all the time.
Yeah. It's nice to just see stuff like this where it's a short paragraph or two. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. The next one. I was trying to find out how many Blackstone fortresses there were, but I could not. There's a lot of Google searches.
Fair enough.
So the next story. Thank you, Scott, for sharing your story with us.
Yeah.
The next one is by Tony, and I believe it's an orc one by the looks of it.
Or does that mean you're doing voices?
Of course.
Excellent.
That is the only way for people to hear me is if I vocalize. Okay. The jungle floor of Cerberus 2 burned slowly as Zagdred led off another impatient burst of flame from his combi scorcha. The wild fauna recoiling from the hungry flames as they threatened to birth another wildfire in the wake of the orc convoy. Zagdred had brought his warband to the star system the Humies called Hades after his best weird boy Snazskull. Fucking orc names.
This is great. These are great names so far.
Has been thrown into the frenzy by a vision sent from the gods themselves. After rampaging through a rival war boss's camp, Snazskull has foretold of a great wog coming to the Humi worlds here. The cunning Deathskull's war boss planned to use this coming conflict to loot and pillage the scrap needed to build his own iron wog and crush all before him in a tide of deadly killy war machines. Or at least he would if there was even scrap of good loot on this Sogan world. Since landing on the planet, the only good fight the lads had found was with those gene stealers lurking in the undergrowth. The oversized bugs made for good eating, but not for good looting. Okay. scorching another passing patch of undergrowth, Zagdred turned and bellowed from the back of the looted Layman Russ he was riding in. Snazskull, ye git, ye sure dis is right, the right Yumi world? Durs is nothing here but Zoggin bugs. Wow. From the back of the nearest ramshackle truck, a large orc holding a copper staff began nodding maniacally. Occasionally, flashes of green lightning leaping between the staff and the mechanical headgear that comprised most of the creature's skull. "Yes, yes, yes, boss. Soon mighty Gork will vomit many humans from the great sky." "The great grin in the sky," sniggered the weird boy, excited by his own prophecy. "And with them brings much good loot. Yes, they better do," roared Zagdreg. "'Cause I'm very sick. You've eaten stinking bugs. And I'm a start to think you may taste better." Perfect.
those orc language lessons are really paying off.
Yeah, like I already find it so tough to read. This is undoing years of reading lessons trying to read orc speak, man. Grinning as he imagined touching the weird boy with his scorcha, Zagdred was nearly unbalanced as the layman rust rumbled over a rise in the jungle floor and down into a steep valley below. Suddenly, the ground around the orc convoy exploded upward with a telltale impacts of heavy ordnance. Spinning around, Zagdred could see in the distance Yumi base deep in the valley. Another explosion and a nearby orc truck erupted into a fireball of flying scrap and orc bodies. The Yumi base had some good DACA, and Zagdreg spied a large tank, much like his own, firing into the orc ranks. At last, something worth Zoggin lootin'. Okay. Banging his power claw against the hull of his tank, Zagdreg bellowed for the driver to head straight for the Humi war machine. "Get that killie wagon now," roared the war boss. "Wog!" That was it. Cool. Yeah, what a nightmare to read, but it was fun to read. Some cool orky stuff. I liked the part which is like the imagery of weird boys and like the warp lightning.
Yes, it's the crackling. Lightning from the staff to his head.
Yeah,
that was
cool. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a cool image.
I like, this is your WOG, I guess. You know, you have Zagdred as your war boss.
Yeah.
His number one weird boy, Snazskull.
Yeah, and it seems like they want to do an iron WOG, which I am assuming is like lots of vehicles and stuff and just lots of metal. So they're after scrap.
That's pretty cool. I like that Tony included like a preference, like what kind of WOG they want to do.
Yeah, yeah,
there's like the weird WOGs and there's like a pain WOG. Is that one?
Yeah.
So an iron WOG, you know, sure. That's cool. Yeah. You have like a focus. I can picture your orc army.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like a very mechanized
thing.
I bet you have like a stompa somewhere in there too. Lots of iron.
Yeah.
Cool. I wonder, does he ever say what clan they...
Death Skulls.
Oh, they're Death Skulls.
Yeah, so
okay.
Got some nice blue lucky guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, I like that you include the world, and they're going after Hades.
Yeah.
Is Hades... Is that... That's not Armageddon,
there's
is
a
it?
Like, there's a...
Hades Hive.
Yeah, exactly.
But, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So Hades is like a, do you know off the top of your head where that's?
It just sounds like a made up one. I don't think that actually
okay,
is.
Okay.
Hades 40K. Let's do a Google search.
And the jungle floor, Cerberus 2, you know, name the planet.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Cerberus 2. I think that's even made up. Yeah.
There's obviously a gene stealer infestation on this planet.
Yeah. I do like that. They're eating all the bugs.
So he's like that line he said, there's nothing here but those Zoggin bugs. All I could hear is, I ain't had nothing to eat but maggoty bread for 3 stinking days.
Perfect.
That's all I could hear. You're doing that.
Same fucking, yeah. Same mentality.
God, I'm excited to watch Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's your second reference. Yeah, we're watching that this weekend. All of it.
Yeah.
It'll be nice.
In our group chat, Mark, Christian, and I, we have our own, you know, group chat. And it felt like there was a while there where every day I was just adding in another Lord of the Rings meme.
Yeah.
And just saying December 19th. That's get ready, boys.
And we did. Me and Christian, we prepared every time you got that. You know,
good.
We picked up our sword, swung it around the yard for a bit, preparing.
This is a good sword.
Yes, another quote. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah.
For the orcs. They were fun.
Yeah, it was a very fun story to read.
All right. Next, we have To Daniel. And this, I think it's titled Catachan CXVII, which I guess goes to 117th.
Yeah.
And then he included, just in case you need a phonetic help on Catachan, Catachan, Catacan, or Catation.
Ooh.
So I guess To Daniel is saying, take your pick.
I will.
What's your pick, Mark?
Catatia.
Catatia.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going off script on this one.
Catatia.
Yeah. All right, here we go. The 117th Catacan Regiment are specialized orc hunters who are renowned throughout the galaxy. Their guerrilla warfare and infiltration tactics among orc clans are highly regarded by Imperial Command. They are called on at the most dire of times, when an infestation is rapidly claiming the Emperor's worlds, or a war boss is getting, quote, too big for his boots, end quote. The first members of the 117th were initially part of the Catacan Penal Legions. Penal Legionnaires, who miraculously survived battle after battle, were drafted into the regiment by order of Inquisitor Vrax of the Ordo Xenos. He trained compliant legionnaires with a variety of skills and tactics across multiple planets and environments. This ranged from the jungles of their homeworld, Catacan, to the heat-shrouded desert world of Belisarius IV, making sure the legionnaires were capable of adapting to any situation. The less compliant became dummy orcs. Selected legionnaires would often be mistaken for Colonel Schaefer's last chancers. Hmm. When asked, a legionnaire will simply reply, "No, I work for a living." Sorry, it just feels a little... Okay. Over centuries, joining the 117th became selection-based, as Catacans wanted to prove they were better than the best. Those unsuccessful either harbored deep jealousy towards successful candidates as they returned to their original regiments, or became dummy orcs. The selected members are then taught advanced survival tactics specific to orc territory, how to live off fungus, cover their natural scent with that of the greenskin, and how to skin and eat a squig. Candidates are then trained in the art of communication and infiltration. This has led to the members of the 117th to speak with a mixed accent of High Gothic and Old High Orcish. Other Astra Militarum personnel have dubbed this accent Aussie, which has subsequently become the nickname of the 117th. Common phrases by the Aussies are, but not limited to, g'day mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair dinkum.
Yeah.
Flat out like a lizard drinking. You bloody drongo. And my personal favorite, we're not here to fuck spiders.
Of course. I hope that is a common Aussie saying. That's crazy.
I would love to land in Australia someday and like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, the passport people. What is your purpose of business here?
That's right. And I answer, well, I'm not here to fuck spiders.
You may enter. That's code.
He knows the secret password. Oh, God. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Aussies have proved their expertise in infiltration by assassinating a multitude of orc war bosses. It is rumored that the Aussie infiltration is so effective that one member of the 117th eliminated the war boss of the Carnage Killa's clan and took his place, leading a war against the enemies of the Imperium. Imperial records say that Aussies would walk through orc camps painted in green and purple, set booby traps, sabotaging orc vehicles and equipment, usually rigging explosives to engine ignition systems, rocket packs, and even creating the famous SEDs, or a squig explosive device, which is the task of incapacitating a squig, compacting as much explosive ordnance inside it as possible, and then waiting for an inquisitive orc to claim its surprise. They would leave the camp as quickly as they arrived. Aussies also employ other infiltration tactics, such as wearing orc war gear, modifying their vehicles to look more orky, red paint is a common theme, and holding up a life-size painting of an orc with a "not a Yumi" written boldly on the parchment, or softly chanting "sneak, sneak" as they carefully make their way through the orc camps. They have also been known to lure unsuspecting orcs with a whisper of teef and loot, the orc blindly following the promise of riches only to have their own efficiently removed. Due to the high-risk scenarios the Aussies find themselves in, there is never room for mistakes or delays. Once a mission has started, it will not end until it has been completed or the personnel assigned are killed. This go-go-go, or balls-to-the-wall mentality, gave them the model, who dares wins. To accomplish these rigorous missions, Aussies use fast, hard-hitting war gear from the Imperial Armory. They prefer to be transported via Valkyrie or bike, covering ground as fast as possible and holding the element of surprise. Sentinels were used for scouting, however, even when converted to look more orky. The Greenskins were still able to identify it as a Yumi vehicle due to a lack of DACA and arms. Yeah. Other Militarum regiments don't believe these modifications are acceptable in the eyes of the Emperor and often query the loyalty of the Aussies. Any accusations are quickly rebuked by Inquisitor Vrax. The exact numbers of troops and vehicles, vehicle types, and weapon loadouts have never been recorded into Imperial records. This is due to the scholar assigned to keeping records vanished after he was volunteered, or voluntold, to make the first SED, or squid explosive device. Okay.
Very cool. yeah, that's sweet. The only change I'm making in my head is these should have been Ogryn, I think. They would just be able to fit in just a little bit better.
Okay.
But
if there was, I mean, Cetaceans are the biggest humans.
But they're still just humans.
Orcs are like, what are they, 8 feet potentially?
Yeah, you know, yeah.
These are big boys.
Yeah. But like, I love all the themes and like, in my mind, it just makes it better when it's like Ogryn, like, and they're chanting "sneak." Like, they believe it then.
Sure,
like, Ogryns believe it. The orcs believe it. Everyone's believing it, you know?
Everyone's submitting to this reality.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I honestly really enjoy that. There's some funny stuff.
I wonder at the Ordo Zenus, the inquisitorial involvement in this regiment. So Inquisitor Vrax was the first... people were drafted into the regiment by order of Inquisitor Vax of the Ordo Zenos. He trained compliant legionaries with a variety of skills and tactics across multiple planets and environments. It's got like a real Rambo, like feeling to it. The whole like, I am in the forest, I will murder you of the forest, you know.
And I'll eat this wild animal.
That's right.
Yeah.
I will skin this squig and eat it alive.
Exactly.
I like that. I like the thought of just everyone having, you know, war paint on and looking like really dirty. Maybe even like cutting an orc in half, scooping its insides out, and then wearing its skin, you know, to like
a nice little pant orc skin.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. I would not mind seeing that modeled, first of all.
Yeah. There could be just some wild orc model. I love the one guy who actually ended up taking over the orc warband and leaning against other armies. Like,
that's how good they are at infiltrating orcs, you know. And I do like the inclusion of the Ordo Zenos. Obviously, they would just have a little bit more understanding, and it kind of allows you to get away with some of the more heretical
like modifying vehicles and stuff.
Absolutely. To look orky.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a pretty big no-no. Like,
but the Ordo Zenos guys, they would understand that.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. They're okay, like maybe you're doing something wrong, but it's for the good of what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if they are you know, like run by Inquisitor Vax. You know, is he like their regiment commander? Is their authority still part of the regiments? Or has he kind of like made it his own inquisitorial retinue type of thing, you know?
Like, it sounds like it was still a part of like the guard regiment.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I thought too, because a lot of regiments still like engage with them is what it sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I think Vrax must just be around all the time, because any accusations are quickly rebuked by Inquisitor Vrax.
Oh, well, then, yeah, he must be around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just leading the Penal Legion. Very cool. Yeah.
Okay, dummy orcs. Do you think that means that these failed recruits are literally used as, like, training live dummies? And they're like, we're going to paint you green and hunt you. I can't think of another reason why you'd be called a dummy orc.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't quite piece that together either.
I couldn't piss it together either.
Piss it together.
I don't understand this. I'm not super familiar with the last chancers. So it said selected legionnaires would often be mistaken for Colonel Schaefer's last chancers. Any idea what that means?
Yeah, I don't know why they would be. Just because they're like one man army. I have fucking no idea. But it sounds like the dummy orcs are actually the members that are taught advanced survival tactics, specifically to orc territory. They're the ones who go and do all these things.
Oh, so yeah, a dummy orc would be the one that's scooping out the insides of the orc.
Yeah. And wearing the orchid.
Okay. They're like doing the hardcore infiltration.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Because, they're the dummy orcs. All right.
Yeah. Very cool. I love that they just paint themselves purple and green and then they're like just walking around like laying booby traps. Yeah. Not an orc.
Yeah, exactly. An orc literally will wake up, look at them, and be like, oh, I must not have seen it because it was purple. So.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
We're not here to fuck spiders.
We're just here to read listener lores.
Yeah, I liked that one.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like most of these, especially because you can, like the Slaanesh one, you can combine Slaanesh and Harlequins.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in this one, you're combining orc bits and regimental bits.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
The other one was just like looting Imperial vehicles.
Sure,
essentially.
Orcs and Imperials again. Yeah. You know, another combination. Yeah. It allows so much freedom in how like the aesthetic that you build your models.
Well, I'm glad you picked up on that theme because I actually went through all of our listener lords and selected a variety. I did not.
Welcome to my Grables Adventure Times. My five short Grables. Can you guess the theme?
Exactly. Yes. Okay, so, and the last story we have for you guys today is by PJ Colley, and it's a long one, but we'll get through it. Alrighty, here we go. Darkness. All the Ardon could see through the main viewing port of the bridge. As far as he could see, there was nothing in before him except the darkness of space. The distant flickering light of remote stars was all that broke it up. If it wasn't for the navigation computer grinding the freight hauler of the ship, it would be some junk hurling through the vacuum of space at high speed. Adron enjoyed the haul trips between the inner system planets and the outer ring stations. It was peaceful and gave him time to wash off the stress of family life back on Juvie's spaceport, Lotek Station. He had moved from the orbital station around 9 cycles ago, along with his wife and now teenage son. Though it had been good for work, his wife had made it prior painfully clear she would rather be on the surface of Juvis on her family's farm. At least from the bridge of the hauler, he could kick back and put his feet up on the control panel at his leisure. Leaning back in his chair, he caught the reflection of his face. Pale, ghostly skin stretched out over slightly chubby-cheeked face. Surrounded by dark brown hair, Adron was still convinced that the low gravity that comes with living in space was removing wrinkles from his face. Years of working in the sun on the fields had made him look older and more weathered than he really was. It could have been either the low gravity or the reduction in physical working making him wider in the belt, but his wrinkles were reducing. Either way, he did. That's some stuff, yeah. You start blaming gravity for your waistline. Holy moly. Ardon looked over his co-pilot, Town. How would you say that?
Town.
Who was sleeping in the rack they had set up in the rear corner of the bridge under the bulkhead. It had made easy for doing shift changes over through the flight, but the snoring of his co-pilot seemed to be so well practiced as was the only breaking at was only breaking concentration. The thought of using a wet towel to color Talon's face and stop the snoring for good had crossed Adron's mind a number of times, but the bribes he would have to pay at the next spaceport to make the body go away was hardly worth it. Talon was at least 20 cycles Adron Sr. He had been working on long hauler freights his whole life and was one of the most experienced pilots out here. He should have been a captain of a much grander ship than this, but had turned down the offers a long time ago. Even with his advanced schooling and experience on the engineering decks, Talon was happy with a simple life. He was tall with handsome complexion and silky blonde hair, but had never married. Again, a simpler life choice. Adron had often wondered why he had signed on as a co-pilot, but had never really bothered asking. Seemed like he enjoyed the solitude of work, and Adron wasn't going to ruin that. As long as they got along and the freight made it to its destination, there was nothing else to worry about as far as he was concerned. Adron glanced over at the control panel while sipping at the fresh caffeine drink. The panel was a mix of light-up buttons, dials, read screens with streaming data. Everything from the engine output through it to if the reheating oven was on could be controlled from the panels in front of him. With only two crew members, most of the ship was hardly ever seen unless something was going wrong. Even the most problems could be solved from the right adjustment on the controls. All Adron had to do was make sure that the data scrolling past the screen was within the limitations and everything would be fine. Making a mental note of the readouts, he started to run through the checklist again. Engine temperature, 104 degrees, that's fine. Engine output, 60%, and still accelerating through vacuum. They had another few hours of acceleration to go before shutting down the engines. They could go faster, but then maneuvering would become dangerous due to the inertial strain it would put on the ship's hull. A dangerous option with the main shipping lanes. Fuel supply, 70%. That should be more than enough for a return trip. Communication system running as expected. Auspecs, all clear ahead, and only a small signal off to the port side. Adron had never seen anything show up on this leg of the journey before. Kicking his feet off the panel, Adron looked closely at the Auspec screen. Damn asteroids drifting into space lanes, he mumbled to himself, waving his hand over the screen to whisk the dust and dirt aside. Peering closer and fiddling with the dials to adjust the contrast, he tried to get a better idea of what he was looking at. The blip on the screen showed a large object moving at reasonable speed. Adron figured out it would skip through the shipping lane so fast it would hardly be worth reporting. Asteroid skips through the system regularly, and only on occasion have they made contact with a ship whose crew wasn't paying attention. The object was now getting close enough that the Auspec system was able to start plotting its course, dotting lines forming ahead of the object, measuring its velocity and direction. The line started to bend off as if it went giving the object's pass a relative to the line started to bend off as it was went giving the object's path relative to the freighter. The course plotted was clear of the freighter by a few hundred kilometers to the rear and below by a few degrees. Nothing to worry about, Adron mumbled. Exhaling deeply, Adron relaxed back into his chair. That was enough to wake him up a little bit at least, but another cup of recaf was still on his mind. As he mastered the energy to stand and make the trip to the kitchenette in the adorning room, something beeped. Adron knew the beep and he knew what it meant. Cursing and hoping that it was wrong, he turned back to the Auspecs. The plotted course for the object had just changed, coming a little closer to the freighter. The course cleared and plotted again, followed by another blip, indicating another change. Again, it was closer. "Hey, Talon, wake up," Adron called. "I think we have a problem." Talon started and rolled over to face away from the open area of the bridge and raced the bulkhead. "Dial the engines back, they'll correct on their own," he mumbled. "Talon, this is serious," Adron shouted, throwing the data slate at his sleeping co-pilot. "Got something moving out there, and it's headed out our way." Talon sat up, unsure of his surroundings for a second, and confused as to why his back hurt where the data slate had hit him. What do you mean, something's moving? There's nothing out there, and pirates stay clear of the shipping lanes. It's probably just a rock floating through. That's what I thought, but whatever it is, it's changed course, and it's heading for us, Adron replied. Followed by another beep from the Auspec as it was agreeing with him. as if it was agreeing with him. It's a collision course with us now. It's on a collision course with us now. I thought you should probably come with. Watch this. I'm going to fire up the maneuvering thrusters and see if we can avoid it. That can't be right. There's nothing out here. Talon said as he got up and moved over to the Auspex. Ardon stood and switched chairs to sit at the controls. Talon sat down in the now vacant chair behind the engineering desk, checking the Auspex and adjusting the dials to try to sharpen the image. Looks like some kind of ship, not anything like I've ever seen. Either I'm getting the focus wrong, or it's two ships that have been fused together. We should be able to see it in a minute. He reached over and switched the viewing screen from starboard for the starboard rear. It was just visible, a small speck at first, but getting bigger and bigger. Another beep from the Auspex. The course hasn't changed, but the velocity had. It was speeding up. It's a ship, all right, speeding up and coming straight for us. Talon said. Try the Vox. See if you can talk to them. Maybe they don't know we're here. Talon fired up the Vox unit and set the broadcast on all frequencies it could cover. Flicking the microphone on and depressing the broadcast button, he attempted to raise the other ship. Unidentified ship. This is a freight hauler X-ray Tango 179. You are on collision course with us. Please respond. There was static. Nothing in response. He pressed the broadcast button again. Unidentified ship, this is freighter hauler X-ray Tango 179. Please respond. Can you hear me? The moment went by with no response. Talon glanced over at Ardon, who was watching intently from the other side of the main console. He shrugged as the Vox spat out static. Ardon nodded in the direction of the view screen. It doesn't look like the ship can hear me. Talon turned and looked at the image. There in the center of the screen was a largely oddly shaped shift, no larger than the different defense cruiser that patrolled the space around the ports. The main body of the ship was fat, round, and appeared like it was half-built. Thrusters were strapped to the sides of the uneven manner, and hanging off the port side was what looked like a cargo arm with a large claw attached to the end. Excellent. Across the bow was a large armor plate fashioned into an oddly shaped skull and painted red. What the hell is that? Ardon asked. That's not good. I've heard stories of orc ships that look like this, Talon said. Ardon had heard the same stories from crews at space terminals, old space crews who had too many drinks telling ghost stories of what lay out among the stars. Crazed creatures with green skins that would destroy worlds by slaughtering every living creature on them. He knew they existed, but never thought that he would ever see something like that in his little area of the Imperium. Passing fleets of the military never even stopped here to expect to resupply. Not even shore passes were given. That can't be. There's no orcs anywhere near here. The Imperial fleet is fighting orc three regions from here. They can't have come here, Ardon said. His hands were getting sweaty on the control column. There's not that much. I'll finish reading.
Okay.
Well, do you want to stick around and ask them who they are? Talon shouted back. It doesn't matter anyway. They were just about on us, and we have no chance of outrunning them. I think we're stuck here. What do we do, Talon? We can't just do nothing. The hull is pretty thick. Maybe we can speed up, and we might be able to make the next checkpoint. Doubt it. We can't accelerate as fast, and no doubt they are armed. Emperor knows why they haven't already shot us down. There's nothing we can do, Talon said. There was a quiet for what felt like an eternity. There was only one option. We could hold off long enough to call a defense fleet and tell them. We might not make it, but they need to know. Get calling then, Ardon said, strapping himself to the control chair. He started turning on all the drive systems that had been shut down for the hull. It's a freighter, not a fighter. I can't hold them off for long. We can't outrun them, no chance. But they're fast enough, they won't be able to turn. We haven't hit the top speed yet. If we break, they'll miss us. Hit the reverse thrusters, maximum output. Ardon did what he was told. Reaching past the control column, he switched the engine power output from the main drive to reverse thrusters. The force was immediate, forcing Ardon into the restraint harness that he had just put on. Talon was thrown half over the console in front of him, only being stopped by his legs getting caught under the chair. The force felt like it tore his muscles from bone as the knees bent the wrong way, causing him to cry out in pain. The freighter was slowing for only a moment before the orc ship started to turn. It slowly adjusted course to meet the freighter's path. The uneven engines burned at full power, made it turn unpredictably, and the nose of the ship tilted up. The Auspex was calculating the course with only 10 kilometers between the ships. At the speeds they were now traveling, there was only 1 minute. The course plotted still across the freighter's path. If they were going to miss it, it would be very narrow. Neither man spoke as the view screen was completely filled with a red-faced orc ship. Ardon was praying to the Emperor that he would see his family again. Talon was focusing on the Auspex screen so intently that his mind simply couldn't process the thought of anything else. A loud bang and the shockwave rushing through the ship structure marked the start of a collision. There, it was followed by silence. For a moment, nothing happened, and it was more unsettling than the sound of the collision. "What just happened?" Ardon asked. Talon stared at the Auspex for a few more seconds. "They only scratched us. They're moving off. I think we're clear for now," Talon responded. "We're getting a call. We won't have long before they're trying again. Call the fleet." Talon, ignoring the pain in his leg, started to adjust the long-range Vox for the frequency to raise the fleet. The unit wasn't responding. Something was wrong, and Talon didn't know what. He was still looking over the system's diagnostics for information. The Vox was working, electronics still online. What was it? It didn't make any sense for the unit not to be working. Then it struck him. The damage. Talon looked at the damage screen and found his answer. The transmission tower had been broken. Either by sheer luck or careful planning, the orcs had knocked out the ability to raise an alarm. "We can't call out. Tower is broken," Talon told Ardon. "It didn't work." What? "What do we do now?" Ardon said, turning back to the control panel, looking for the answer in the instruments. "Nothing. There's nothing we can do. We've slowed, and we're basically a sitting target now." Both men sat quietly, waiting for a change. Talon watched the Auspex screen, waiting. The orc ship was moving out of range, but it didn't turn. He watched, waiting for the ship to turn around and make another run. Waiting for over 10 minutes in silence for what was sure to be the death. It didn't come. The ship finally moved out of the range of the Auspex to pick up. "They're gone. I don't get it. They just left," Talon finally said. "What does that mean?" Ardon asked. "The stories I've heard about the orcs is that they don't leave anything behind." "I guess they had something else to do or just got bored because we weren't fighting," Talon suggested. "Either way, we're at least 8 cycles from the nearest stop to report this. I'll set for max speed." We set course for the nearest station. Talon checked the navigation computer to double-check Aldarn's course. He finally broke the silence. "Well, we should look for a new job, too. You can bet those orcs will be bad for business." Huh. They survived.
That threw me for a loop.
Yeah, hard. Okay. That was the end of the story. PJ Cullen, thank you so much for sharing that.
Subvert my expectations. I was waiting for a bloody death for
oh, good. They ran off, and then you hear a knock on, like, the bridge door.
Yes, they had dropped an orc off on the ship or something.
But, when there's one orc, the guy still knows what that means. It might not be over right now, but orcs are coming. Look for a new job.
Maybe in a conscripted legion.
Yeah.
To prepare the sector for
army.
We've
just opened up 10,000 new job openings for this. Fucking
that was cool. It's well written.
We don't get like a lot of like individual space battle. Like you get ships on the 100,000 population scale.
Yeah,
you know?
Or we hear about entire fleets. You know, but this was the story of Adron in town. And
yeah,
no, it was very good. It was well written.
Yeah,
it had a good flow to it. Nice pacing.
Very nice. It was written very nice to read and stuff. I appreciate that.
It interacted nicely with the technology. You know, like I could really picture the entire console set that he was looking at.
I agree with you. He painted a good picture of it. I just don't know if it was a 40K picture of it. Like,
what do you think was missing?
Like, he used the word Auspex, but that was like the only 40K word.
Data slate.
Data slate. That can be very,
that got me.
Like... I don't know. I just, there was not one mention of a skull on the floor somewhere. You know, there just was. This could be put into any sci-fi setting.
That's true.
Necessarily scream 40K to me.
Okay.
There's a couple cool things, like, you know, you see that oddly shaped skull painted red of the orc ship. You know, there's a couple things like that that are very, you painted that picture perfectly. Or like when you're slowly describing like the fuse ship and it's got like this arm and, you know,
yeah, there, like there that are, claw.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there are some very cool 40K parts to it, but
I wonder if that's intentional.
It might be.
Now, we've talked before about how 40K, the galaxy itself is so massive that anything can exist in it.
Yeah.
Like a romance story or just a high adventure, even like high fantasy, that exists on some planet
somewhere
in 40K. I wonder if his intention was to kind of introduce something, a story in 40K that we know is in 40K basically because we're told it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily feel 40K, because I agree that there is, it's missing a little bit of the grim dark that you expect in 40K.
Like, there wasn't even a bloody nose. Like, somebody should have definitely slammed their fucking face into a column and broke their nose.
Yeah, during the breaking, you know?
Yeah, yeah, like, it was very cool, but I understand that. It could just fit into any sci-fi. But I really still enjoyed this story. Yeah.
I love that it didn't end how I knew it was going to, you know?
Yeah!
I knew right off the beginning, oh, they're orcs? Well, they're going to die.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I appreciate that.
It's kind of a cool concept, too, just, like, these two guys, they've never seen orcs. Like,
no, they're stories.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of such a cool concept. Like, not every world in the Imperium is a war zone. Most aren't, in fact. It's probably a relatively peaceful empire, but you do have these hotspot planets that are like...
Right. You get Armageddon, and you get Vigilus, you know?
But like, yeah, vast swaths of the Imperium go unmolested for thousands of years, you know?
Yeah. So much that they, you know, war is might even just be a thing that happens somewhere else.
Yeah, just stories told about the orcs you've never seen.
You've never seen a space marine in your life.
Yeah.
You've never seen, like, a fighter ship in your life. You know, I like that one line, this is a freighter, not a fighter.
Yeah, that was cool, too, like, how they tried to, like, throw off the orc ship or whatever by breaking. Yeah, very cool.
No, I think this person has a nice grasp on, like, space and, like, how you would act in space, you know, and it was cool.
And just like, like in space, it's so vast, the distances. Like, there will be 10 minutes of silence where you're like, I know they're out there, I know they're even a million miles away, but my god, they're so close, you know?
Like, to be so close, that they were able to scratch, damage the tower on it.
Yeah.
I like to think that it was just luck, personally. You know?
Okay.
Orcs. And why did they leave? Why the fuck did they leave?
I like that it's, maybe they just, we didn't fight back and that's what they wanted.
Yeah. Oh my god, all they were wanting for is a good fight, and these people clearly aren't going to give them a good fight.
Yeah. Very cool.
Crazy. Yeah, thank you, PJ Collie. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was sweet. Thank you so
much. It was a cool
story. Yeah. Sweet. Well, that is our episode. Wow. If you have a story that you would like to submit, send it to lorehammerpodcast@gmail.com and we'll add it to our inbox.
Yeah, we'd love to read it and then talk about it, maybe even ask questions or anything. Yeah, today was a pretty good batch, I must say.
Yeah, there was some good ones. Yeah. Aussies and Ferdinkum. Fuck. Yeah, very cool.
Well, I guess that kind of wraps it up, hey?
Yeah. We're hoping to get another episode out here before the end of the year.
Hit
us up on Discord what you want. I'm thinking right now, as of right now, I'm thinking I want to do an Octavius War segment.
Okay.
We haven't talked about orcs or Tyranids in a while. What better way?
Wow.
And it's cool. It's like...
That's the never-ending growth battle, isn't
it? Yeah. So it'd be cool to unpack that. They've added a bunch of lore to it recently that I haven't read. So I'm kind of excited to see what's happening.
Okay. Well, you know, if that wasn't enough, if that's not enough to get your juices going, then, you know, message Mark on our Discord. Tell him that's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Or tell me what else you want to hear.
Sure,
know?
Well, I guess we'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.